Welcome to the final audio section of PDH 210, National CAD Standard 3.1 of April 07. We're going to talk about the last two sections on the sheet and then review the worksheet that accompanies the course. Notation. The goal is to be able to honestly say full compliance after the category head notation. There are five types of notes indicated. Use is optional, but any use must comply with the standard. The types are general for the entire set to be placed on sheet G0. Discipline general. For us, that would be on sheet E0. So things that apply to all of the electrical and might be referenced on the sheets where they're needed, see general notes on sheet E0. Sheet general note as 1, all work must be done in accordance with OSHA, NFPA 70E, and the National Electric Code. I think this is a sheet note because I like to have it reproduced every time. Perhaps I'm a little paranoid on this. I think certainly I am paranoid on this. I don't want installers being hurt while they're working on a job where I did the design. And I want to do everything I can to make it safe for them to do it right and to remind them to do it in a safe way. And to remind the supervisors to follow the standards that are out there. They know the right way to do it. It's not a good time for a shortcut. And fourth one is references to a specification section. Now, the CAD standard is real big on this, and it may be a very good idea, but I have to warm up to it. Details on how to do it. I've never done it, and as I look forward, I don't see any reason I would do it. The reason there are details is AIA is also the author of the CSI specs, the Construction Standards Institute Master Spec. It's on one hand a product, but on the other hand, it's a very good compilation of best practices in buying materials. Now, what they're saying is there should be a close coordination between the execution portion of the specification and the sheet that shows the drawing sheet that shows the picture of how it's installed. Well, the concept's great, but isn't that what the designer does? The designer edits the specification. The designer creates the drawing sheet, or at least edits portions from previous jobs for the current job and shows where they're done on the current job. So yes, the CAD standard contributes something to this, but again, it's a little bit distant from my viewpoint. It may be in other disciplines it makes more sense entirely. Reference to a detail keynote as discussed in the symbol section. Now, that's where we were using the horizontal hex polygon with a number in it, and that's a key note on that sheet. And we'll do things, let me think, there's a case where I've done this, and it makes, it's a real good solution to a very specific problem. It seems to me the one I'm remembering, we had different baseboard electric heaters, and we used the keynote to call out which baseboard electric heater was, whether it was the 4-foot or the 8-foot or the 12-foot, something like that. We may have had some with that had receptacles embedded in them, but it was just a real nice way to keep track of this. Now, again, architects are very big on symbols and schedules to do this, and I think that's an excellent way to do it. I'm thinking in terms of the door schedule. A lot of times I have worked with architectural door schedules, and that's an excellent way to communicate what gets installed at a specific location. You might wonder, why was the electrical guy working with them? We were putting different access controls on different doors, and the easy way to keep track of which access control we were putting in was to key it with the door tag so that you buy the door, you install the door, you install the referenced access controls with the associated door. Use of codes is another section on the National CAD standard. The goal is to be able to honestly say full compliance under the category heading use of codes. Now, it's almost exclusively architectural. It's good to know a little bit, and it's good to know that it is required of the architect and by the code. There are 8 identifiable criteria, and I tried to copy these properly from the standard, but I don't claim a high level of competence in even understanding the words that architects use. The standards say they are optional. I think that means if the project has a sprinkler system, then the architect must give active fire protection criteria on his lead sheet. The criteria, as I've extracted them from the standard, are as follow. List of codes applied. Now, in electrical, we would say IEC or NEC, something like that, the International Electric Code or the National Electric Code. I'm trying to think if I've ever used the International Electric Code. I keep reading about that, so I know it exists, but the National Electric Code is the one I'm familiar with. It's the one I read in the PDH course. It's the one that I talk to people about. I probably worth looking into the IEC. If someone is using the IEC, International Electric Code, for goodness sake, tell them on the sheet, because you may run into contractors that share the same deficit I do that are not familiar with this International Electric Code. And if there are peculiarities in it, we better find out about it. I mean, there's no reason to have two different books if they have exactly the same content. There's something different about the IEC than in the NEC. List of jurisdictions and ordinances. This is so tremendously important, and it does reflect down to the electrical engineer. Is this being inspected by the state, county, or city? And you might say, well, that's silly. Of course, everyone knows. No, I'm the electrical engineer on a lot of projects, and I don't know. If it's in the city, I will normally talk to the city plans review department because I know those guys down there, and I can ask them questions to get answers. And even if they're not enforcing it, they're going to give me some good guidance. But I know that we've done some state projects where it's funded by the state, and a fellow in the state capitol is the reviewer on the plans. I don't think they give them to the county or the city, even if it's located in a county or a city. So if it's duplicating, again, let us know who's going to be reviewing these drawings. If there's something that's a little questionable on how we're handling a certain problem, it's better to talk to the authority having jurisdiction rather than waiting until you get a red slip during construction. Oh, that's certainly a bad idea. And you don't want the project held up during plans review either. If we know who the jurisdiction is, and maybe even contact information, wouldn't that be a nice thing to have on the list of jurisdictions so that you can call a guy up and ask him about your question? Architectural design basis. I know this means something to architect, and if I saw a sample sheet, I might understand it too, but I don't have to. Let's just say there is a standard for doing it if it is included in the project. Description of passive fire protection is listed in the CAD standard, and I think this is just a reminder for everyone involved that it's sufficiently important that we should at least intentionally exclude it, not overlook it. Accessibility, and I know what's going on here. Americans with Disabilities Act, how are we addressing the requirements of that? And this shows up on the electrical. I've had a number of cases where I've had to put door openers, and I've had to retrofit door openers onto existing buildings. Well, somebody has to figure out where the button's going to be to open that. I've seen them on the wall adjacent to the door. I've seen them on a little pedestal out front. Well, somebody has to decide, and we can do it. Not a problem, but somebody has to think it through in advance. Or we can wait till it shows up in the project or construction and do it then if you really, really like. Numerical energy design criteria. This sounds like something out of ASHRAE 90.1. And again, this isn't my field, except I do some lighting calculations for them once in a while. And I've gotten in the habit of putting in an electrical check meter because I think ASHRAE 90.1 requires energy usage be monitored by the building automation system. Now, that's getting a long way from national CAD standards, or maybe it isn't. Maybe the fact that we have to put energy design criteria on the lead sheet for the drawing set means that this is very much part of the National CAD standard. Structural criteria, don't know much about structural, don't know much about architecture. Those two guys better work together, get their drawings right. And active fire protection criteria as opposed to passive fire protection criteria. And I would guess active means sprinklers, but again, I don't do sprinklers, so I'm not going to worry about that. That concludes the content portion of this course. I'd like to spend just a moment reviewing the worksheet. Again, this course began because I found the standard very confusing. I had an exceedingly difficult job reading it myself. And the way I was able to put it together so I gained a feeling that I understood it was by pulling out what appeared to be the important part. Now, it wasn't an outline because it wasn't in linear order. And again, with three documents and the content interspersed among all three of them, it's kind of a challenge to pull out things in order. And I hope I've done a good job for you. But the best thinking that I have contributed is in this worksheet. So let's look at it again. Starts out with, oh, by the way, and I'd like to say this again, the worksheet is in public domain. If it is a good document that helps you, I'd like you to put it in your file and share it with your designers. Let's use it if it's a good thing. The statement that it complies to the extent indicated below. There are a number of categories, and I have indicated measurable components under each one. The categories are layers, drawing set organization, sheet organization, schedules, plotting, drafting, terms and abbreviation, symbols, notation, use of codes. And we've just spent a few minutes on each of these topics, going over the checklist items that go with them, and what the meaning of the words are within the standard, what the meaning and reasoning are on the checklist item, which I added and are not part of the standard. I tried to put another column over on the right and tabled comments and optional items that are only part of the worksheet. It didn't develop as well as I hoped it would. I hope that the stuff that is there is of value, and what's wrong with it is things are missing. I see I've put in some of the sample illustrations there. And again, the sample illustrations are contained within the content of the text version of the course also. Following the checklist of the worksheet is a list of standard plotting line weights, layers, and colors. Again, this is extracted from the standard. By copyright law, you cannot copyright a list. Now, obviously, if I just Xerox their list and put it in, that would be a copyright infringement. But I can copy portions of it, and they're not supposed to be able to sue me. We'll see if that happens. Also, there's some annotation on this that does not exist within the original standard. For instance, I have a terrible, terrible time reading blue on a black background. And in AutoCAD, it's very, very common, almost universal, to use black as your background color in model space when you're doing your actual design. To me, blue fades into black, and usually I can figure out there's something there, but I can almost never read it. When I get into those circumstances, I change my background color to gray, which seems to work pretty well, even though it's not conventional, and I can read the blue again. I've got a layer naming format illustration. And what I did was, and we discussed this in the oral presentation of the content as well, a single layer, EP-POWR-BUSW-PLUG-N. And we explained that there's a reason for this much detail, and it doesn't have to be onerous, because in a good electrical design, you may use only 10 or 15 layers, even though there may be 100 electrical layers, authorized electrical layers to choose from. You still use a reasonable number of them. The first category, E for electrical, the optional secondary category, required dash for readability, required main category, and again, it's usually power and lighting. It could be something else, I'm sure, but power and lighting. If we got into one of these things about instrumentation or security, we might want to put it there. Optional second category, and I had busway here because I've been doing a lot of work with busway recently. Annotation, A-N-N-O, is one you'll see in an awful lot of actual applications of the bus, I'm sorry, the layer naming format. Optional third category, I have plug here because I put all my bus plugs on a separate layer so I could turn them on and turn them off. You might wonder, why would you do that? Well, the reason I was doing that was I was using the same busway for bid package 100 and bid package 200. Now, if you're familiar with a busway, they got a bunch of little places for plugging in plugs. You have an awful lot of spaces on the busway. Well, in an eighth inch to the foot plan, you can't see those. I mean, they're way too small and too close together. But what that means is, in bid package 100 and bid package 200, I can reuse the same location on the bus because there's an adjacent location you can't see due to the scaling. So I could turn off the bus plugs from bid package 100, turn on the bus plugs for bid package 200. And I don't think I was causing any trouble for the guy in the field. I mean, still, I was using a reasonable number in each of the bid packages, and I had a way excess number just from the way they fabricate the busway. The tag, which they consider new or existing or demo or future or temporary or phase numbers. And this is where I was talking about bid package 100, bid package 200, bid package 300. And I suggested moving it to the front right after the EP notation, or right after the E notation, so that all the electricals would be listed together and all the bid package 100 would be listed together. The first character identifiers. We spent a lot of time talking about this. I hope it's not necessary to repeat them again. I argue about I for interiors instead of instrumentation and the lack of a security section here. Secondary identifiers we discussed again. And we have nothing for data here, and I don't see security as a secondary identifier either. So these are just things that the people in the standard never thought about. Standard paper sizes. I had problems on a plotter this past week, so I learned more about paper sizes than I really wanted to learn. What's going on? There are ISO A sizes, B sizes, and C sizes. In the ISO sizes, it starts with A0, then you fold that, and that makes an A1, then you fold that, and that makes an A2, then you fold that, and it makes an A3. So, is that exciting? I did a plotter setup, and a plotter install, and the plotter wouldn't plot to size A0, and it turned out that the plotter driver recognized A1, A2, and A3, but didn't recognize A0, and they reinstalled it for me, and then it worked. So, more than I wanted to know. ANSI sizes A, B, C, D, E, I think we've heard about that. Architectural sizes A, B, C, D, E, and F, which are not the same as ANSI sizes. Title block requirements, the designer information, the project information, the issue information, management information, sheet information, and sheet ID. Recommended plot block information, time date stamp, full file path, plotter used, plotter control file, optional default settings, optional plotter commands, optional overlay controls, optional list of external references. Now, the job I'm working on now, I have 42 external references, so maybe we wouldn't do that on this project. Optional layers plotted. I'm working for a large industrial, and their requirement is when we submit files, all layers must be turned on. Now, what that means is that you can see everything if you bring it up on the screen, but you can't plot it. Why do I say you can't plot it? Because you've got the BP-100 and the BP-200 stuff both turned on, and they're going to clobber each other. So it's nice to... This thing about external references can be a little bit of a hairy problem. I understand their requirement to turn them on. I understand that I like to have them turned off so when you pick up a sheet, you can plot it. Just it looks right on the screen, and it plots right, and that's what you receive in the mail. Optional production hours, and I can see how project managers would like that. Schedule components. It's supposed to have a heading, minimum of 3 columns, an identifier column or a mark. Description, characteristic number 1, characteristic number 2 is a separate column, characteristic number 3, whatever you need. And finally, a comment column. An electrical schedule per the standard, and that the one I have shown is the improved one rather than the one in the schedule. I get the feeling the distribution panel board schedule was put together by someone who had never seen a distribution panel board schedule and thought, oh, it would be a good idea. Well, we've learned a few things over the years. We know more than a minimum on doing that. Electrical discipline designator list from a major U.S. manufacturer following NCS standard. Now, once again, I'm not allowed to duplicate a list as a Xerox, but I could duplicate somebody else's list that happens to be in public domain. And this shows all of the electrical layers that they recommend. And it comes out to, well, it's a pretty long list. I would say this would come out to about 3 pages, 8.5 by 11. Line weight plotter test. This is something I included. It's optional beyond optional, but it's interesting and problematical. I have trouble plotting things, and I think other people have trouble plotting things too, but I don't hear about their problems, and I'm very, very sensitive to my problems. So what I did was I ran a scientific test on plotting. Now, what do I mean here? Well, since I was familiar with the line weights prescribed by the National CAD standard, I said, let's try those line weights and see what they do. And they didn't do what you would think they do. For instance, there is an illustration in the National CAD standard of what an extra thin line looks like, what a thin line looks like, a medium line, a wide line, extra wide, double extra wide, triple extra wide, going on like that. I tried to do these on our plotters, and they didn't plot like the example in the book. Why is that? I think somebody faked it in the standard. I think they said this is supposed to be a 0.01 line, and so we'll draw a 0.01 line. That doesn't have anything to do with plotters. The plotter has to produce a 0.01 line for it to be a plotter line. Plotters don't produce 0.01 lines. From my experimental test, plotters don't produce anything below a 0.025 line. Now, let me say that again. My experimental test, I used HP and OC plotters, HP and Xerox printers, and I did a lot of these. I don't think they are physically capable of printing anything less than a 0.025 inch line weight. When they try to do something smaller than that, they do not plot the line. They plot the 0.025 with dithering, meaning they skip alternate dots. So you say this is 0.025, prints dot, 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 dot. You try to do something that's 0.01, it prints dot, skip, dot, skip, dot. So it comes out thinner, obviously, when you look at it, but the width is still the same width. Now, is somebody out there arguing that an inkjet uses dots and a laser doesn't use dots? Wrong. A laser uses dots. We're used to... Actually, the inkjets are fabulously good these days, and the lasers are fabulously good. But they are both raster technologies. They both use dots. In the worksheet that I have distributed, I have a limited number of test results that I plotted. And what I did was I plotted extra thin, thin, medium, wide, double extra wide, like that. And I called out the width in millimeters, the width in inches, and I showed you what it looks like. Well, the 0.005 is invisible. It doesn't print. The 0.007 almost doesn't print. The 0.010 was worse. Wait a minute. In science, things are supposed to be linear. You start from worse and you get to better and then you get more better. No, there was a dropout in the middle. The 0.010 was worse than the 0.007. And then you get to the bigger ones and they smear all over the place. And I think we knew that. If you try to do text with a wide line, you get a smear. Except you get the smear in Roman S, you don't get the smear in Arial. Why is that? Well, because they're different technologies. Wait a minute. Fonts are different technology? Yes, fonts are different technology. Roman S is called a line font. It is defined as a line in AutoCAD. Arial is a true type font, meaning they bring in the font from a font set they bought from a third-party manufacturer. Am I making any sense at all? In any event, look at the examples on this worksheet, and it does make sense. When you print Arial Light, you get Arial Light. When you print Arial Medium, you get Arial Medium. When you print Arial Heavy, you get Arial Medium. The line width does not apply on the heavier line weights on the Arial font. When you print Roman S light, you get nothing because it was way too light. You print it medium, you get something medium that's readable and everybody's happy. You print heavy, you get a smear that you can't read at all. Why is that? Because AutoCAD, and I'm sorry I don't have MicroStation experience to share with you, AutoCAD uses line weight when it prints Roman S. Now, another thing that happened here, the color number affects the way it plots. Wait a minute. The name of it? Not the width that you specify? The name of it affects it? Yes, the name of it affects it. I did these. I said, that is weird beyond belief that the 0.005 would be unreadable, 0.007 would be poor, 0.010 would be unreadable. How can it get worse as you go getting bigger? Well, I think what was going on, and I made this up in my head, I haven't read it anywhere, I think that the plotter driver was including the color as part of how it chose to print them. And the reason is, when I named it a low number, using different colors, it came out different than when I named it a high number, where they were all some kind of sick green, from light sick green to dark sick green. I was in the 200 series. I used the 100 series for line weights, and then I used 200 series for line weights, and I forced the width. The width does not have anything to do with the name of the color. I went into AutoCAD. I want this to be 0.05. Make it 0.05. Yes, it's 0.05, sir. And it screwed it up when there was a color involved, and it did not screw it up further down the line where I think they were ignoring the color. In any event, in the handout set, I've got a, let's see, what is this? A 36-inch four-color plotter. And it was plotted in color, and I forced it to black. And I don't remember how I forced it to black. But anyway, it's black coming off of a color plotter. The next one was an 11 by 17 laser printer. And again, the low numbers, I had intermediate dropouts. The high numbers, I got some strange thing. It looked like weird shading in addition to being smeared out. But once again, the Arials worked a lot better than the Roman S worked. In the handout, I've got another 11 by 17 plotter. And this is a real old plotter. Real old plotter worked better than the new plotter. Old guys like it when things like that happen. Here's a 36-inch laser that is pretty consistent, going from nothing to readable to smeared. And what is this? This is the best plotter we have in the company that had a dropout on the 0.07. It was light but readable on the 0.005, unreadable, completely gone on the 007, light but readable on the 0.010. I'm sorry, 0.010, yes. After I did these tests, I was talking to an OC salesperson, and I had them do the same test for me on their plotter in Chicago. It happens to be the Chicago Sales Office Services, and they mailed them to me, and they were not distinctively different. So what do we learn from this? We learn from this there's something hinky going on in line weights, and you shouldn't be surprised if somebody has to spend hours getting the plots to look right. Much better to use the person who plotted them last time and figured out all these quirks that are built into our software and hardware than somebody new, because all draftsmen are created equal. If you can plot, you can plot this for me. No, you have to be familiar with the local plotters and the installation of the plotter drivers on your local machines. I apologize if this digression was painful to you. It's certainly not on the test. It doesn't have to do with getting points for renewal of your license, but it's got to do with putting out good drawing set for customers and for the rest of the organization, and I hope you found it valuable. Good luck when you do take that quiz, and good luck in projects as you use the information learned here. It's been a pleasure working with you.